This is The Hollywood Outsider, a weekly movie and TV podcast. The new episode available each week at thehollywoodoutsider.com. We're also on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, iHeartRadio, or your podcast app of choice. My name is Aaron Peterson. I'm going to be your host for this special episode of The Hollywood Outsider. As our loyal listeners know, every once in a while, we like to bring you interviews with independent filmmakers to give you an insight into both what goes into getting their films made, as well as insight in the respective film itself. Random Tropical Paradise, which is now available on video on demand, stars Brian Greenberg and Brooks Whelan as Harry and Bowie. Best friends, they find themselves destined for a vacation after Harry finds his bride cheating on him on their wedding day. Ouch, that burns. So they set off for a bromy moon and use the reservations at a tropical paradise to kind of loosen up, have a little fun. Along the way, they meet up with drug dealers, criminal heavyweights, and of course, beautiful ladies. It's a buddy comedy. It's full of wit and quick retorts, banter, repartee. And even has Joey Pants. It has Joe Pantoliano, who I love. I love this guy. And he even shows up. So it's a great cast. It's a fun movie. And joining me for this exclusive interview is the writer and director of Random Tropical Paradise, Sanjeev Serpil, who has, as we discussed in the interview, the most entertaining bio of anybody I've ever interviewed. To give you an example, my friends, Sanjeev, like 90% of all first-generation Indian Americans, was born near Chicago, Illinois, and was immediately accepted into med school. The details of his upbringing in sunny South Florida are captivating and poetic, and were adopted into a series of successful films starring Danny Glover and Mel Gibson. If you've ever read any industry bio, that kind of humor is refreshing, because it's usually a list of accomplishments, a list of achievements, and it reads very much like a resume many times. So his bio, I know I'm spending a lot of time in this bio, but I laughed out loud, and that never happens when you read an interview's bio. So for this exclusive interview, we discuss his journey to Hollywood, getting Random Tropical Paradise made, how he landed Joey Pants. Yeah, if you want to know why he's called Joey Pants, you'll have to Google it. I'm not going to tell you. It's an entertaining interview, and I really hope you guys give this film a shot. Brian Greenberg and Brooks Whelan are great as Harry and Bowie, and there is so much just fast, quick wit, and it's stuff that I love. Now, not everything hits. I mean, there's a lot of jokes in here. Not everything hits, but man, when they do, they just nail it. And it's very rare that I get excited about a buddy comedy, and especially one that I would watch again, especially these days. They don't make them as much anymore. It's a very entertaining interview, and please remember that the movie is available on video on demand, and you can also find more information at randomtropicalparadise.com. That's randomtropicalparadise.com. It's also in select theaters, so it might be playing at a theater near you as well. Please keep in mind that Sanjeev is traveling during this interview, so the audio quality does vary due to the connection. You know, usually we don't have that problem, but unfortunately he was traveling, so you will get a little bit of, you can tell he's on a Bluetooth connection kind of thing. So give it a pass for that. Without further ado, take a listen to our exclusive interview with the director of Random Tropical Paradise, now available in select theaters and on demand digital HD, Sanjeev Serpil. Hey, Sanjeev, how are you?
Hey, Aaron, I'm good. Thank you so much. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. I was telling your publicist you have maybe the most entertaining bio of anybody I've ever interviewed.
Oh, nice. It's all true.
I assume you wrote that yourself?
I did. Yeah. I did.
Well played.
I mean, I had a biographer. I mean, he checked everything out. It's all, I was able to make my first movie off of the royalties I got for selling the rights for them to tell my story for Lethal Weapon 1.
That's fantastic. You are literally the second person this week in the last couple of hours I've interviewed who's from my home state of Illinois. You're from Chicago and I'm from Rockford. Do you miss Chicago at all?
I do. Full disclosure, was born in Illinois, but grew up in Florida. Moved down to South Florida when I was about two, but still have a ton of family in Chicago. Go back to Chicago all the time. I do miss it. Chicago is like the greatest city in the country, if not the world, for like 2.5-3 months out of the year, and then outside of that, it is the coldest place in the universe.
That sounds accurate. Yeah, that's pretty accurate.
But I do like Chicago's, man, it's the best. Like it's a big city, but everyone's so nice. There's like the best deep dish pizza you can get anywhere. I'll have a day where I'll just eat like six times and go between like Gino's, Uno's, Giardino's, Lou Malnati's, eat nothing but pizza, gain 25 pounds in a day and be completely happy about that. And there's just so much cool stuff to do there. Like everyone's just walking around in like Michigan. You can run down. I used to like run from Michigan Avenue down to the lake and it was like all gorgeous. And And even just everyone walking around, you can literally strike up a conversation and then end up going to lunch with a complete stranger who then becomes like a friend for years after that, you know.
One thing I always ask anybody who's on is that I want to know, when did you decide you want to be a filmmaker? When did you decide this is the dream for you?
Oh, man, as long as I can remember. I mean, I was maybe 4 or 5 years old the first time I saw Back to the Future.
Mm-hmm.
And that scene, like even at 5 years old, that scene of Marty's playing Earth Angel and he's slowly disappearing because he hasn't gotten his parents together yet. And Biff is in the car with Lorraine and he's breaking George McFly, Crispin Glover's hand. And just the way that they crafted that scene of going back and forth and Lorraine is like, George, help me kind of thing. And it's that, you know, she's the damsel in distress. And George looks at her, looks at Biff. You know, the way they show his fist closing slowly and the music is swelling. And then he knocks him out. They kiss. Marty stands up because he's not disappearing anymore and really playing Earth Angel. Like, that entire scene hit me so hard when I was 5 years old and it's never left me. That was the first inkling where I was like, I want to do that. I want to be able to create that. And that's kind of been the impetus of basically my entire career, is being able to recreate that Back to the Future moment. Is being able to, yeah, recreate that Back to the Future moment through my movies for someone else. And, you know, whether it's either, you know, just through, you know, a joke that someone laughed at, a scene, I want to be able to... You know, I'm going to butcher a Tolstoy quote, but he has that quote where it's two people might have experienced completely different experiences, but through art, they can share the same emotion.
Mm-hmm.
I just want to be able to do that. So, yeah, that was the very long answer.
That's a great answer.
You know, that Back to the Future moment from there. And then even beyond that, the Karate Kid crane kick moment. I just want to be able to, the first time I saw that, I was like, oh, this is, you know, there was never any time where I was ever disenfranchised or made cynical as to the power of movies. So I've basically just been fueled by wanting to be able to create those moments for myself and other people through the stuff I do.
Man, sweep the leg, Johnny. That's a good one.
Fear does not exist in this dojo.
let's just quote Karate Kid for about 15 minutes. That'd be great. Your debut film, Screw Cupid, kind of took a different look at romance, and now in Random Tropical Paradise, you've got a groomsman who ruins a perfectly good wedding in the first 5 minutes. I feel like these movies are a little therapeutic for you.
No comment. No. Of course they are. Yeah, it's the best way to be able to, I think by just the nature of being a writer, it's very solitary. And just with myself as well, I've never been one to put myself out there totally, even with, you know, outside of obviously my wife and now my kid and family and things like that. I was never able to kind of fully be a part of something or fully put myself out there, let's say, to where even with, you know, friendships and, you know, I have a bunch of very close friends and things like that, but there's always still a part of me that I sort of keep for myself. Mm-hmm. Where you're sort of a little reserved, and maybe you don't, you know, just not, you know, necessarily giving yourself or becoming a part of something. And for me, at least through writing, it's my way of being able to fully put myself out there, fully putting myself out there through other characters. And it's not necessarily that the experiences are the same, but it's definitely therapeutic in terms of being able to, yes, definitely get things out, hopefully in an entertaining way. But yeah, you know, rule number one is write about what you know. You know, this way I'm able to get things out, I guess, therapeutically without having to put myself out there 100% because I'm doing it through other characters. So that is a very... Damn you, Aaron. That was very astute.
I was actually telling a friend that I haven't laughed with a good buddy comedy in a while, and I popped this in. These are my kind of jokes. It's my kind of humor. What was the inspiration for the best friend's homie moon?
It's and one, thank you so much for I'm so glad you know you like the film, and we're laughing through the buddy comedy.
That's great.
My job is done. I really appreciate that you liked it. Yeah, you know, the inspiration, there's that sort of, you know, there's the universal event that everyone goes through of having a relationship end and having that relationship end, not necessarily having the relationship end on your terms, or even knowing that the relationship was going to end, not having it end on your terms or even in your timing, basically having it ended for you. And, you know, that sort of heartbreak and figuring out how to deal with it is, you know, something that's sort of a zeitgeist. Everyone sort of sees that as a rite of passage and kind of going through. And it doesn't necessarily have to be the first time you ever get into a relationship. It could be, you know, throughout anyone's dating life or dating history that just sort of punches you in the stomach and kind of comes out of nowhere. And so I wanted to kind of see, you know, from that sort of universal feeling, I wanted to figure out, okay, what's the movie version of that?
Mm-hmm.
What's the most kind of, you know, crazy, screwball, whimsical, zany kind of way to show that, to tell that event in kind of like a screwball buddy comedy movie? And so I was like, oh, the biggest way that could happen is at a wedding. And not only is it at the wedding, you know, it doesn't happen at the wedding, but it literally happens to the groom, you know, by the bride 5 minutes before the wedding. There's, you know, that's, it's not even like I had time to call off the wedding because the wedding is going on.
Right.
From there, you know, with every sort of gut-wrenching heartbreak that you have, there's also always that moment where your friends rally around you and they're like, all right, like, we're going to get you through this. And even though they have the best of intentions, it's not always the best plan. It's the best plan for the time, but it's not always the best plan because it's always like, you know, you've always got one friend that's like, all right, you have a ticket and a free license to just party your ass off right now. So let's do it. And then, you know, the movie version of that is, okay, the wedding has been canceled, but let's go on the honeymoon. Let's take the best man and let's just go on the honeymoon. And, you know, let's make sure we have as many hijinks that ensue. And so what's funny is after the movie came out and people were watching it and we had some press talking about it and everything, I actually started hearing about people that happened to, that they were like, oh, you know, it obviously didn't happen exactly the way as the movie, but they were like, oh, you know, I had a friend that they were going to get married. They didn't get married, but then he ended up taking, you know, all his friends on his honeymoon that he was supposed to go to, or like, so, you know, it was sort of tapping into that zeitgeist and making it as kind of crazy and zany and wacky as possible.
Yeah, it's pretty funny. You've got a lot of rapid fire dialogue, quips, one-liners, that sort of thing. How did you screen test Brian Greenberg and Brooks Wheelan to make sure that they could deliver it the way that you envisioned it?
So with Brian, he and I actually, when Brian was, before he signed on, he wanted to meet with me. So he and I, and this was 2 days before, you know, his actual wedding as well, he and I got together and we had the first of probably three or four-hour meetings about the script, his character, the movie. And they were fantastic because, you know, it was great kind of being able to talk to him about, you know, his character, about the script, about his relationship with the other characters, and then get his, and then even being able to further craft the character based on conversations that I had with him. So it was phenomenal. I mean, it was, you know, after that first meeting, I went back and I started rewriting some things based on the stuff that we talked about. And then as I was heading back from that first meeting is when I found out that he had officially signed on for the film. So we met, he signed on to, he attached to the film, and then he got married in that order. Brian, and two, the amount of work that he put into the script and put into the film, you know, just really, really learning everything he could about the script, obviously pays off in the film. So I had no, and the fact that, you know, he's a pro, he's been doing this for years, that like, I've loved him in everything else he was in. You know, I had no problem whatsoever or no questions or concerns. In fact, it was one of the reasons why we were actually gunning so hard to get him for the film, that he would be the perfect person to kind of play the character that, you know, he carries the film. He's the central sort of through point. He grounds everyone else and allows them to be as crazy as they possibly can be and still be believable because he makes it believable. You know, with Brooks, stand up before, I loved his stand up. You know, I knew his delivery, I knew his timing. That was a big reason why I also wanted to populate the cast with, you know, comedians and comedic and improv actors, is because you know that their timing is already on point. So when Brooks actually came in to read, he read for Randy initially. And after his audition, I went to the casting directors and I was like, you know what? He'd make a really badass Bowie. And the casting directors were like, yes, we totally thought that too. We were about to ask you about that. And so, you know, the casting was very meticulous. So I definitely met with every single actor in the cast before we even started shooting, you know, just to talk to them about the script, talk to them about the movie and, you know, get to know them, as well in terms of, you know, being able to populate the characters as well. So yeah, you know, individually with Brooks and Brian, I was like supremely confident and insanely excited about them in their individual performances. And then just by, you know, while we were shooting on set, on location, you know, I also have a very big no D-bag policy on any of my sets where, you know, if working with someone for 20 hours a day, I want to be able to also be very happy hanging out with them for those 20 hours a day. So I wanted to make sure that, like, you know, everyone that was cast, everyone that's on the movie, are also people that, like, also I also like hanging out with, and then ideally would like hanging out with each other. And that's what we got in this movie, is that, like, we all hung out even after we stopped, you know, after filming stopped for the day. We would go out to dinner, we would just hang out at the hotel, you know, we would be doing escape rooms together. So, like, everybody became really good friends. What's great is that, you know, you hear all the time on film sets where it's like, oh yeah, everyone hung out while we were shooting, but then after the movie was done, everyone scatters. And I mean, everyone, we all still talk even to this day. You know, if it's texting or getting together or, you know, just jumping on a call and catching up. So it's been fantastic. And then with Brooks and Brian, especially, like, they became really good friends. Like, they hang out all the time when they get a chance. And yeah, you really see that in their performance in the film, is that, like, they're actually really good friends. And, you know, that is also conveyed in their performance, where it is really two really good friends that are really looking out for each other. And in terms of their performance, you see it on screen, but then you also see that, like, to pat myself on the back using other people's performances, my extent and confidence in knowing what I knew Brooks and Brian could do individually and together, I think definitely paid off in the film. The stuff that they did with their characters, like you said, with their, you know,
banter,
with their rapid fire sort of banter and repartee, it was a ton of preparation and, you know, the script and the direction and everything like that to allow them to just completely kick ass like they did. So yeah, that is again my incredibly long answer to your incredibly good question. Apologize for babbling.
It's okay. And you also got Joe Pantoliano. You got Joey Pants. How'd you get Joey Pants?
So I was getting on a plane, and I do have to give a much, much deserved shout out to the incredible casting directors that I had, Bly Nailing and Janelle Scuderi, who, you know, were able to put together, they basically allowed me to choose my dream cast. And I couldn't have done any of that without them. They are phenomenal. So when they were putting together the list, you know, our sort of our dream list of the Vincent character, which Joe Pantoliano plays in the film, you know, I saw his name on there and I was getting ready to get on a plane. And they were like, we're going to go out to Joe Pantoliano. And I was like, oh, sure. Like, absolutely. Like, you know, definitely. Like, first choice, go out to Joe Pantoliano. I was like, I have no, you know, he's not going to do it. He's Joe Pantoliano. Like, you know, go nuts, have fun, knock yourselves out. I'm going to get on this plane. Like, give me a call. Give me a call when I land and let me know how that went. Like, you know, not thinking anything about it. When I landed, I had like 100 missed calls on my phone and a bunch of texts being like, can't believe you're on a plane right now. Like, call us back right now. I call my casting directors, and they were like, Joey Pants is doing your movie. And so I'm, like, screaming in the middle of an airport, which is the worst place to be, like, jumping for joy and screaming and running around. So I, like, got out of the airport 50 yards away from the airport, and then was just, like, jumping up and down, like, whoa, how did this happen? And so I emailed Joe when he signed on and was like, hey, I'm so excited you're doing the movie. I can't wait to work with you. Like, it's an honor. You know, I'm really excited to do this project with you. And he wrote back and said, I liked the script so much, I said yes before I even got to my part.
Oh, wow.
And that email is framed and on a wall in my office right now.
That's great. I had a little vision where I just pictured him. Basically, he's Snake from Running Scared if he hadn't got shot. And this is like where he ended up. That's great.
Yeah, dude, that's so perfect.
That's my dream fantasy. Well, I know I got to let you go, but I did want to ask you, how much was ad lib versus script? I am curious about that.
I would say both. There's a lot of the stuff in there that is scripted, but at the same time, I also definitely encouraged, you know, kind of, we would do what was written, and then, you know, we would have time to kind of play around a little bit. And a lot of it actually was, or not a lot of it, but I would say, as opposed to an ad lib, a lot of what would be considered ad lib wasn't actually ad libbed in the sense that we would get together, you know, on whenever we could on nights during shooting. I would get together with the cast and we would kind of go over whatever the next scenes or any scenes that we kind of wanted to run through would be. And I would rewrite in real time, kind of based on conversations that I'd have with the cast.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I think what a lot of, you know, the fact that when I was writing the script, even with the outline, you know, a normal outline is say 30 to 40 words, I had 120 index cards of outlines before I even wrote a word of the script.
Mm-hmm.
So by being that prepared, it allowed me and it even allowed the cast to not have to think about sort of the bones of the script or the bones of the scenes. And it allowed us all to kind of then just instantly get into play mode once we had everything else in. I guess my answer is both, in a sense that there's a lot written, like the Danny Trejo scenes were all written, you know, but then there are kind of little sort of hilarious throwaways and kind of things that the cast would do to make the characters their own, which I absolutely loved, that were, you know, definite ad-libs and improv that we threw in there. Because, you know, my job as the director is kind of to create that sort of atmosphere to allow the actors to be able to inhabit the characters and tell the story in the best way possible.
Mm-hmm.
So it was kind of have my writer and director hat on there to where any time that we were sort of playing around with some things, I could still go in and be like, hey, that thing that you said was great. Let's just say the first part of it so we can get the timing in and make that, you know, make that joke really, really hit. It was a really, really great collaborative kind of effort on those instances. But yeah, it was kind of the perfect, you know, the perfect mix of both, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, no, it does. It does. Thanks for the movie. I laughed quite a bit. Best of luck on the release.
Oh, thank you so much. Thank you so much. I'm so happy that you liked it. And yeah, I'm great at the writing and the rewriting, but then like talking for interviews and whatnot, I apologize if I rambled. Clean up whatever you need to clean up. And yeah, thank you so much. I really appreciate it. I'm so happy that you liked it. And thank you for having me on.
Oh, anytime. So take care and best of luck. I hope this thing breaks out.
Oh, thank you so much. Me too.
Yeah, I bet. Take care.
Thanks.
There, I hope you guys enjoyed it. He's a really great guy. I thought it was a pretty entertaining interview, and the movie makes me laugh out loud many times. Not many movies do that. Just give it a shot. It's a fun movie. Once again, thank you for listening to the Hollywood Outsider podcast. We try to bring you interviews with filmmakers in the world of independent cinema when we can, so I really hope you enjoyed this one. Remember to subscribe and review us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or your podcast app of choice. Our normal show has a new episode every week and is available at thehollywoodoutsider.com. This is Aaron Peterson reminding you that the next time you head into the theater or sit comfortably on your couch with digital HD and watch Random Tropical Paradise, buy popcorn. We'll be right back.